Steve, thanks. It's Bill Leff. It's Harry Tynowitz. Harry's sitting in for Wendy. Both Harry and I will return. Both Wendy and I will return on Tuesday. Alexander Zelbin is our guest right now. Alexander serves as managing editor for TheDecider.com. Go to Decider.com, a great website if you like entertainment news, television news. Alex, thanks for being here. Everything good?
Yeah, it's great. Excited to start a nice long weekend.
Yeah, it should be a good long weekend. Let me share something with you that Harry and I were talking about before we got John, and I'd love your comments, your thoughts on this. We lost two giants this week in Aretha Franklin and John McCain, and they've gotten a lot of media attention, and well-deserved, of course. But Neil Simon, the playwright and the man whose work is responsible for some of the greatest sitcoms in TV history, also passed away. He's not getting much attention. Would you agree with Harry and my assessment that without Neil Simon and some of his work, most notably The Odd Couple, but there's other choices, TV would be a lot poorer without him, wouldn't it have been?
100%. You know, I think everybody's first instinct nowadays when somebody passes away is to jump onto Twitter and put out a tweet. And frankly, I was kind of struggling with how exactly you encompass somebody like Neil Simon into 280 characters. But I think you're absolutely correct. You know, you look at The Odd Couple, he wasn't the first person to invent that dichotomy of the sloppy dude and the clean dude clashing in a small space. But that set the tone and the template for decades of comedy afterwards. You know, to give a more recent example, I don't know if you guys have seen Marvelous Mrs. Maisel on Amazon, which is absolutely a wonderful show, but you would not have that show, which is now one of the most award-winning shows on television, without Neil Simon. There's so many things like that that you can just see his influence trickling down over the years. He's phenomenal and definitely missed.
Alexander, I get into discussions with my friends about, you know, shows that they think are just like so well done that I think people only watch it because The Rock is on there. Do you have a thought on HBO's popular Sunday night show, Ballers?
You know, it's funny. We talk about Ballers sometimes around The Office because it's one of those shows that gets lost in the critical conversation. Mm-hmm. I think most TV critics kind of forget it's on the air, particularly in comparison to Insecure, which shares the time slot and people do talk about quite a bit. But people love it. You know, that is one of those shows that I think actually is a water cooler show, where literally I'll be walking around the office and I'll hear people talking about, hey, did you watch Ballers last night? Oh, that was so funny that happened on Ballers. So I think you're right that people watch it for The Rock. It's certainly gotten better over the years. But at the same time, it's one of those shows that you can turn it on, you can enjoy, you can laugh, and then you're done with it after half an hour, versus a lot of other critically acclaimed shows that you're going to spend a little more time talking and thinking about.
That was a huge show in England, right? There's a British version of it, right? An original British version of Ballers. Am I imagining that?
Is there?
I thought there was.
I didn't actually necessarily know that fact.
I thought there was.
I feel like that would be called Footballers or something
like
that.
Something like that.
I know we steal a lot of their shows, right?
Yes, we do.
The Office, Extras, right?
All in the Family, Sanford and Son.
Right. Yeah. I think it was the original one, though. Yeah.
One other quick thing about Neil Simon, before I forget. As in my mind, there were three different versions of The Odd Couple. There was the traditional one that everybody knows with Jack Klugman and Tony Randall, but there was also an all-female version of it with Sally Struthers and Rita Moreno, and there was an all-African-American version of it with Ron Glass from Barney Miller and Tim Reed from WKRP.
Right.
I don't remember any other show ever going through those many incarnations.
And they rebooted it again with Matthew Perry.
They did, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, and Thomas Lennon.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. So four versions.
You know, I'd call out, I don't know if this was your guys' experience. I know you have comedy backgrounds as well, but I saw right after he passed away a lot of female comedians in particular saying that the female version of The Odd Couple, it was something that colleges picked up a lot, and it was something that really helped them get their start and feel their chops in comedy, to be able to be on the same level as male comedians, being able to work on essentially the same words, that it gave them a lot of inspiration. So in that alone, I think that's pretty fantastic.
Interesting.
Too.
Yeah, very fantastic. This was a surprise as far as I'm concerned. You tell me. Over on Shameless, one of the leads is leaving the show. Emmy Rossum is going away, huh?
This was a huge shocker, particularly because it's not like Shameless is a workplace comedy. You know, it isn't people coming and going all the time. It's about a family. Emmy Rossum is a key member of the family. She's a key member of the show. She's directed episodes. She's really pushed it forward behind the camera, pushing for pay parity. People love her on that show, but she felt like after 9 seasons, she's good. You know, she is good with the show. She wanted to leave while she was on top. It doesn't seem like they're going to be killing her off or anything like that. The network and everybody behind the scenes is very open about she is always welcome back whenever she wants to come on the show. But ultimately, she's been on it for 9 years, excuse me, and she wants to pursue film work, and everybody's very supportive of that.
Okay, the new TV season is upon us. A lot of shows have already debuted, and some more are coming. And tonight, I remember when he was just the funny dude on The Office. Now John Krasinski is an action star. He's going to be, and I think he'll be better than Tom Cruise, playing Jack Ryan. What can you tell us about this Amazon show?
Yeah, the whole series is actually online now on Prime Video. So if you have a Prime Video account on Amazon, you can check out the whole run of the show. This is a younger Jack Ryan than Ben Affleck, if you remember when he did that, but also Alec Baldwin, Harrison Ford, even Chris Pine, excuse me, has played a version of Jack Ryan. So this takes him back to when he's just a young CIA analyst and then slowly starting to work in the field. I will say a bunch of our folks here at Decider have watched multiple episodes of the show already. We weren't in love with the pilot. It's a little slow and a little by the numbers, but one of our writers, Josh Sarkatch, watched ahead, and he says it really does start to pick up and get a lot more fun as it goes on. So if you're looking for a good spy caper, and particularly if you want to see somebody, you know, imagine it's a very weird episode of The Office, go check out Jack Ryan.
The production values have got to be fairly high. I've only seen clips of it. I haven't seen the pilot, but if you follow the novels or the movies, there's a lot going on. It's got to be a pretty expensive mm-hmm. show to make, right?
This is not a spoiler at all, but there is a scene in the first episode where they're at an enormous outdoor party. It's, you know, sort of a big mansion, and everybody's just milling around, and they're having serious dramatic scenes. And then for no conceivable reason, a helicopter lands, picks up John Krasinski, and leaves. And we were just talking about, this is the sort of show that is like, sure, just throw a helicopter in there. Why not? But Amazon is all in on it. They've actually already greenlit a second season of the show. So particularly if you're hesitant about getting into something new, just know there's going to be a lot more Jack Ryan to come.
That sounds like the way that they made James Bond movies. Let's just put a let's just have a helicopter pick them up while they're in the wedding tuxedos.
Right.
And let's see, where do we film this scene? Well, what country have we not filmed in yet?
let's go there. Yeah.
It's definitely a big international production as well. There's an enormous cast beyond John Krasinski in it. And like you said, there's a lot of big action sequences, a lot of traveling around. But it also, per the source material, really gets into the nitty-gritty of what it means to be a CIA analyst. So it's not just James Bond sleeping with a bunch of women and shooting up people, and that's pretty much it. It does treat it in a very serious manner, what it actually means to be a spy.
Why do you think this is one of those characters, Jack Ryan, that, as we mentioned, has been played by several different actors in not that big of a span of time? James Bond movies have been made for almost 50 years, if not 50 years, so I understand the turnover there, but why is there so much turnover playing Jack Ryan? Is there a reason?
I think it's just different people making the movies more than anything. It felt like for a little while there that Harrison Ford was going to be the definitive Jack Ryan, and they did make a couple of movies with him.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, as far as I understand it, the way that Tom Clancy is doles out the rights to the books, it just is whoever wants to make them. You know, it's not literally whoever, but it's a filmmaker has an idea for Hunt for Red October, they go in that direction. Filmmaker has an idea for Clear and Present Danger, they go in that direction. The Chris Pine thing was very clearly supposed to be a reboot to start it off and make a James Bond series, but nobody was interested. So instead, now it's going to TV, and you got John Krasinski. It's a little more like a Spider-Man thing, I guess, with the Spider-Man movies versus, say, James Bond, but hopefully this will be the one that sticks.
So we'll get to Danny DeVito eventually, right? It's not yet, but at some point.
100%. He'll be the 50th reboot of Jack Ryan.
That'll be fun. Alexander Zalbin is our guest, managing editor over at Decider.com. We'll take a quick break and then more discussion. It's Bill and Harry in for Wendy on WGN. Bill Leff, it's Harry Tynowitz. Wendy heads the day off. She'll be back on Tuesday. Both she and I will be off on Monday for the holiday, but we will be back on Tuesday. Alexander Zelbin is our guest right now, managing editor over at Decider.com. A great website if you like anything about television or entertainment. Alex, the show opened by me telling a story about Peter Dinklage playing Hervé Valachez, who we all know as Tattoo from Fantasy Island. There was some controversy because people were upset that they cast an actor who was not Filipino, to which Peter Dinklage said, yeah, here's the problem with that. Hervé Valachez was not Filipino. I'm French. Harry and I were both going through a litany of actors and actresses who have played against type. This happens on television all the time. There'll be somebody of a certain persuasion or a certain nationality, but the producers have to try to balance that with finding an actor that's bankable, right? How does that play out usually?
I mean, I think you're exactly right. It just has gotten more complicated recently, and I would even point to in the past year or so when people are more hyper aware of whitewashing controversies. You know, you can look to films for this a lot more, but particularly there's been a lot of white actors who have been cast in Asian roles. The go-to joke now is, oh, do you have an Asian role? We'll put Scarlett Johansson in that.
Right.
So that's something that people are very drilled down on and very focused on. So when something like this HBO film with Peter Dinklage happens, people do immediately react. I dug into it just on a very surface level. I'm not 100% sure who is correct here, Peter Dinklage or everybody else on the internet. But regardless, you know, ultimately, I think you're right. It is up to the movie studio. They do want to make money off of these things. But the argument, on the other hand, is if you have a property that people are interested in seeing that is well done, that people will see it with almost anybody in it. And you can point to something like Crazy Rich Asians, which is a phenomenon right now, which has recognizable stars in it, but other than Michelle Yeoh, who is internationally an enormous star in the United States, it doesn't really have anybody that is a huge name, but still, it's dominating the box office. People are going to see it. So I think that does point to a big sea change.
Yeah. Is it Ronnie Chang, the guy from, am I saying it properly, the guy who's on Daily Show, who's in Crazy Rich Asians? He's very funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, there's Ken Jeong is in it. A lot of people know him from his TV
Hangover.
Work. There's also Constance Wu, who's also fantastic.
Yeah.
There's a couple of other people that show up in there. And plus, John M. Chu, who's the director of the movie, has directed some huge hits as well. He directed a bunch of the Step Up movies, which did phenomenally, and other things. So it's not like there's nobody is in the cast. But at the same time, it's better than if they said, well, to make Chris or Crazy Rich Asians succeed, we got to get Scarlett Johansson. And in fact, a lot of movie studios said exactly that when they were shopping it around, and then they would immediately turn them down. Turns out they were completely right to do so. Mm-hmm.
Have you seen the clips at all for this movie? It's going to be out in October on HBO. It's called My Dinner with Hervé. Have you seen any of the clips, the trailers for it yet?
I've watched the trailer, and it does look really interesting. Peter Dinklage is fantastic,
yeah.
And Jamie Dornan has surprisingly pushed past the 50 Shades series to be a really interesting actor, so it should be a good movie to check out.
Okay, there's a reboot of a reboot without the star of the show. Did John Goodman spoil the Connors, what used to be called the Roseanne show? Did he give away like the fact that Roseanne dies?
That is a very good question. I'll tell you, I have a whole a murder board, like thread board, sort of parsing his whole quote that he gave the other day. They actually started shooting it just today. They sent out the first picture of the table read on the set. So the cast is there, except for Roseanne, of course, who is not in it anymore. And he had come out and said a couple of days ago when somebody asked what is going to be like for Dan, his character, going forward. And he said, I don't know, I guess he's going to be sad because his wife is dead. The thing that's tricky about it is the way that he said it is he said it like that, but you could also look at it as him speculating potentially because we don't obviously hear his tone in articles or anything like that. That all said, I feel pretty confident that whether he was speaking out of turn or not, that Roseanne is dead on the show. We had a whole brainstorming session here at Decider to try to figure out how she died on the show. You know, did she send a racist tweet and then got trampled going up to Trump Tower? Did a MAGA hat squeeze her head too hard? Things like that. So there's a lot of possibilities. I think they'll do something a little more serious, but it should be very interesting to see how it plays out on the show.
They had her, if I remember right, in the last episode, she was about to go into the hospital for knee surgery, right? So there could be complications. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's the age-old hysterical premise of dying during knee surgery.
A separate piece.
Yeah, that's how a separate piece ended. So
now I've spoiled it.
No, Harry, thanks for nothing. So if you're John Goodman, you could throw something out there because you know people are going to talk about it, right? I mean, that's an option too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But I don't think he necessarily has a reason to lie about it, and I don't think anybody has illusions about, like, there's going to be this grand season-long arc mystery of where's Roseanne, what's happening with Roseanne. I think they'll just get it out in the first couple of minutes, talk about the fact, well, she died during knee surgery.
Yeah, move on.
And then figure out as a family how they move on from there.
Yep.
Can I ask you real quick, Alexander, there's a couple of other reboots. Which will be more fun to watch, Murphy Brown with the entire regular cast returning, or the new Magnum P.I., which they should have called Not Tom Selleck?
Hmm.
Well, I'm angry at the new Magnum P.I. because he doesn't have the mustache, so I think we can discount that immediately. But I will say Murphy Brown sounds really fascinating to me. If you guys don't, anybody listening doesn't know the new premise, it picks up with the same cast years later. She is, as usual, a very liberal pundit trying to deal with modern news world, and her son is now an anchor at the more conservative-leaning Wolf Network, so they're going to clash that way. So it should be very current and very pointed and really interesting to watch.
Let me pitch an idea to you. You just reminded me of something. I think this would be a great show. It's called Magnum's Mustache, and it's just his mustache driving around in a car solving crimes. Would that be a good show?
100%. As long as you call it Mustache Rides, I think.
Yeah,
it'll be
now we got a show. I love that.
You just did. Is this show that
right,
looks
too late?
Is this show that looks like a ripoff of Lost? Is it a ripoff of Lost?
There's a couple of shows that are kind of ripoffs of Lost running right now. There's a comedy called Wrecked, and there's another one that's a reality show, which is very specifically, I'm blanking on the name.
No, not the reality show, the Wrecked.
Yeah, that's a very late Lost parody, but it's surprisingly funny. I recommend people check it out, particularly if they thought it was a late parody like I did, but turns out good cast, funny stuff, and it's a fun little comedy.
One other quick question before we let you go, Alex. There's a movie series called The Purge, a horror film series. It's been going on for a while. Now there's a TV version of it that's almost the same thing, right?
It is exactly the same thing. For those who don't know the concept because they're too scared of horror movies like me, the idea is that for 12 hours one day, once a year, every crime is legal in America, including murder. So people go out, they settle their grudges, they rob stores, everything. So this is going to be a 10-episode series on USA. It's going to be simulcast on Sci-Fi, and it's debuting on September 4th, so next week. I'll tell you, I've seen the first 3 episodes, having never seen a Purge movie, and I watched the first episode and said, oh, this is so stupid, and then hit play on the second episode and said, oh, this is so stupid, and then hit play on the third episode. I just kept going from there. Now I want to go back and watch the movies. It's completely ridiculous.
Wow.
Completely over the top, but just a lot of fun and not actually scary, which, again, as a horror weenie, I appreciate it a lot.
Excellent. Excellent. Always fun to talk to you, Alex. I hope you have a great weekend. Thanks for all the information.
Yeah, thank you. Have a great weekend as well.
That's Alexander Zalbin, the managing editor of Decider.com. That's the website to visit, Decider.com. It's right there on your internet. We'll take a quick break, and then more of us, Bill and Harry, on WGN.